Hi there. Welcome to this episode of Just the Discs. My name is Brian Sauer. This is my podcast about Blu-rays. I have a special guest joining me this evening, and his name is Rob Hunter. And Rob, can you just explain to my listeners who you are, you're a film critic, film writer, but in what capacity do you currently work?
Well, I'm Rob Hunter, and I'm currently film critic and editor over at Film School Rejects / One Perfect Shot. I also occasionally dabble at some other sites, / Film and Cricket Marquee. But basically what I do is I write about movies. I do regular reviews. I do kind of some feature pieces. I do a lot of stuff looking at physical media. I don't podcast about it because I'm not that fancy, but I do write about it a lot because I do a regular weekly disc column, and then I do standalone feature reviews of individual titles, ones that, you know, pack a lot in there.
I should say that your weekly column at Film School Rejects is one of my favorite things and something I look forward to every week, where you highlight not only just what's coming out, but then you usually have like the best and the rest. So you give sort of a highlight of what struck your fancy for that week, and then maybe some stuff that didn't quite connect as well.
Yeah, I used to have it set up where it was like, buy it, rent it, and skip it or burn it.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. That wasn't that long ago.
No, but I kind of said, okay, well, I guess I don't need to be that specifically cruel about these. So I just kind of break it down into, I do my pick of the week, and then I do like the best stuff that I think, you know, for movie lovers should be kind of like blind buys or must buys. And then I have the rest, which is obviously usually like the majority of what came out that week. Stuff that's good or bad or, you know, everywhere in between, but, you know, maybe not necessarily worth picking up, you know, on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I've taken many a recommendation from you, often for newer movies and stuff that got released, sometimes just on DVD. That's something I actually value about your column, is that you'll pull out some DVD-only release that I haven't come across, and there's a lot of value to be found in that, I think.
I try and cover as much as I can each week, and oftentimes there are titles that like will be coming out on DVD that I saw, months ago or even years ago at festivals that are finally getting some kind of like just really quiet, muted release with no fanfare. But if it's a title that I was a big fan of, you know, even if it was a few years ago, I'll try and, you know, shine a light and give some attention towards it. Just let people know that, hey, this is finally available. But I will watch things on streaming, but I'm a physical media guy, both just the aesthetic love of, you know, the feel and the look of it all, but also it's just so much more reliable.
So. No, it's true. And I'm with you, and I've always sort of seen that argument completely. It's become more prominent in my life than I expected, the streaming. But yeah, I will never move away from physical because of exactly what you're talking about. But so you talk about a lot of boutique label stuff, a lot of stuff I've talked about on this show previously. Mm-hmm. One label that I haven't talked about yet is kind of newish, at least in the Blu-ray game, and that's AGFA. That's the American Genre Film Archive.
The reason why we wake up in the morning at AGFA is to make sure that the preservation and exhibition of genre films will never ever stop. By having a 4K film scanner in-house, our mission hasn't changed, it's just evolved.
And they're starting to sort of ramp up. They've done some DVD releases, some really interesting stuff so far, but now they're getting into Blu-rays, and we're going to talk about, I think these are the first two?
Yep.
Yeah. We're going to talk about two movies today, and I'm excited. I'm excited about AGFA. How do you feel about this imprint?
I mean, it's early, but just judging off of these two releases, I love it because in both cases, these are films that I was maybe vaguely aware of, but I had never seen either one of them. And one of them had been previously released on DVD by Synapse, a decade ago. But yeah, I had never actually come across either one of them and actually taken time to watch them. So seeing them now presented as well as they are, you know, on these releases, even though they're older, you know, scratchy, just not quite, but almost like 42nd Street type movies, I'm happy to see them in, you know, the best way that I possibly can right now.
Yeah.
So far, two titles in, I'm a fan.
Yeah, I'm very curious how I just heard Joe Ziemba on the Shockwaves podcast, and he was talking about, I should say real quick, we're talking about the Zodiac Killer and Effects. Those are the first two movies. But Joe was talking about the slate for the rest of this year. They've got a movie called Bat Pussy coming. They've got one called The Violent Years. That's an Ed Wood movie. And then he announced an exclusive, I think, on Shockwaves, something called The Sword and the Claw, which is a Turkish sword and sandal movie. So between these two and those other, I'm like, whoa, this is really interesting.
Yeah, they remind me very much, and this is a good thing, of Vinegar Syndrome.
Yes.
Which is an absolutely just brilliant, fantastic label.
Yes.
That, you know, puts out a lot of stuff that I've heard of and maybe seen, but a minimum, you know, third of what they put out are movies that I haven't even heard of. I definitely haven't seen. And I just love that there's people putting so much love and affection into releases of movies that, you know, aren't being talked about and aren't getting the same kind of exposure. And then I get a chance to see them. So I'm happy to see another label follow that same suit where they're not just, you know, releasing the traditional or typical, genre films that everybody already knows.
Yeah,
so I'm happy to have another one like that.
I do appreciate exactly what you're talking about. There's love and care and a curation aspect to it that I feel like some of the other labels, I won't name any names specifically, but there's much more of a corporate product, kind of like, we just got this title from the MGM library and we're going to put it out with no...
Well, you mean real subtle about this label you're not naming.
You know, I'm not necessarily slagging off any particular label, we'll say, but you know, sometimes it doesn't have to be the MGM library. It doesn't have to be that specific label.
Yeah, okay.
But what I'm saying is that these guys, clearly they're saying, this is a film we don't want to disappear and we're going to scan it ourselves. We have the only existing print. And for a fact, I know for a fact that Joe said that the Zodiac Killer print is the only existing 35 print. And they have it. So that's cool. I just think that's neat. And then obviously they involve the filmmakers and they, you know, make sure that they've put some extras out on there. And it's just a lot of care. Same thing with Vinegar Syndrome, you know, great label that I'm a big fan of. Right. So let's jump into it here. Let's talk about the Zodiac Killer.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Bob Keel here. Tonight, we have more news on the Zodiac Killer.
Hey, fellas, hold it down. I want to hear this.
He writes another letter to the papers. And I quote, this is the Zodiac speaking. I am the murderer of the taxi driver over on Washington and Maple Street. They could have caught me last night if they had searched the park properly instead of holding road races with their squad cars.
I am the Zodiac!
I'm sick, you say. I should be put away, but I'm still loose, aren't I?
Nice man, say thank you. I don't like him.
What are your thoughts on this movie?
It's a movie that I think, I'm assuming you've obviously seen both these movies.
Yes,
obviously,
indeed,
right?
I have.
Okay. This is a movie that I had heard, again, just very, very vaguely about, but I had never actually come across it in any format. But what I learned from this release, the movie itself, I guess, is like an okay movie. I'm not going to pretend it's anything like, you know, stellar. It's interesting. It's a great little time capsule. But what sells it and what to me magnifies the experience is the whole backstory to it.
Yes.
All. It's absolutely just nuts, especially when you watch the movie and it's like he's the filmmaker goes out of his way. Well, so basically just to you know, explain it real quick, the filmmaker actually made the film with the express purpose of capturing the Zodiac Killer with the idea, because it was made during the Zodiac Killer's reign in San Francisco. And the idea was that he would, of course, show up in a theater to watch this movie named after him. And therefore, you know, they could have the theater employees or cops, whatever, trained to keep an eye out and then catch him. Just knowing that that's the premise, not of the movie, but behind the making of the movie, is just bonkers. And I love it.
Yeah. And that Tom Hansen, the director, was like a pizza.
So he uses like pizza franchise money
to make this movie. I just think that's amazing.
It's crazy. And the movie itself, like I said, it's a movie, you know, made by someone who didn't have experience necessarily in the field, but was a movie goer and a movie lover. It hits a lot of, you know, what I guess you could argue are, you know, genre beats, whatever. But it's funny to watch too, because again, it was made in a time. You watch something like, obviously, like Fincher's Zodiac, and we have, even though we don't know who the killer is,
because we have so much data and reporting and information about the whole, you know, all the killings. When he made this movie here, when Hansen made this movie, he didn't have access to, obviously, nearly as much. He basically had what was reported in the news. And so watching what unfolds in this movie, it's entertaining. It's fun. I don't know how to describe it. He's not like playing a mystery game. He's showing us the killer.
Yeah.
I think he's going a bit off script as far as like the things that actually did happen at times. He's getting very creative with some of the killer's actions, some of the dialogue.
I dropped the firewood.
We wondered where you were.
The hot dogs are delicious.
I'm so very thrilled you like them.
It's an entertaining movie, but like I said, it's just elevated, you know, ridiculously, knowing that the whole purpose of it was to catch the real killer.
Yeah, I agree with that. Although I will say that I was way more entertained by it than I expected to be. And a lot of that has to do with the dialogue.
All through for today, eh, Jerry?
Yeah, you can say that. I swear, I don't know what's worse, the little old ladies or the big old ladies.
Well, after a lifetime of experience, I can tell you, once they get over 20, they're all no damn good.
What's so special about 20?
Well, you see, when they get 20, that's the turning point. The turning point to disaster. Chinese got it put right. They call it the year of the dog. Or better explained in English, the birth of the bitch.
Hey, you got them pegged all right, though.
Damn right I have. The only trouble is, us guys never learn. We learn too late, too late. I can remember. And I think back in the romance and all that sweet innocence turns to conniving and coldness and crabbing and competition. It's a shame. It's a dirty shame.
That's why I'm still batching it, Doc.
Good. Don't let them dames get their claws on you ever. You know, they don't let go very easy.
You don't mind if I get my claws on some of them young ones, do you, Doc?
Be my guest. And hey, if you get any leftovers or extras, remember, I like them plump and juicy and dumb.
And The actors that he chose, there's just some really outlandish characters, like this actor Bob Jones, who plays like this truck driver who's bald but who likes to wear a wig and go out to bars and pretend he's a businessman. That guy's almost all his dialogue is gold. Like everything he says is amazing.
Listen, kid, I got 4 bronze wires. You've got to help me out, okay?
You got a good look at him coming through the door.
Hey, listen, so I give you your pick.
Last time I saw a mouth like that, I had a look at it.
The old sack over the head routine. Come on, okay?
So
my impression is that he was someone who's probably like an investor or something like that, and so he got to go in there and just, you know, carte blanche, do whatever he wants.
I was so entertained by that guy, and obviously then the guy that they get to play the killer, there is a certain mystery aspect at the very front of it where you're just like, oh, is it the truck driver guy or is it this postman guy or who is it? You know, and then it's revealed, and then it's fascinating. Just to see, I think what I respond to, and I'm sure what I assume the AGFA guys respond to is filmmakers that are working way outside any sort of Hollywood anything. They have they don't have a filter of any kind. They don't have anybody telling them, no, you can't do that, or you have to structure it this way. And I think there is something refreshing and, again, entertaining about a film that doesn't have those boundaries, you know, that's just kind of going and doing what it wants.
Well, exactly. And that's why I was saying it. I think that it's clear that it's made by somebody who, you know, wasn't a filmmaker other than obviously this one film, but he was a movie lover, a film lover. And I think that you can see that in a lot of what he does, where even though he's telling, you know, what, you know, I guess in theory is a true story with purpose, he's clearly having fun with it. And I think part of that is that, yeah, he's not stuck to a formula. He's not stuck to a traditional setup. He can, you know, kind of hit some of the familiar beats, but he's not kind of, you know, reined in by what a studio would have done with the same material. And I think it's just weird to me that he, for a movie that, again, the purpose is to catch a real killer, my expectation was that we would never see the, you know, the killer's face, that it would become a mystery, because obviously we don't know, and the whole point of it is we got to find out who he is. So then to show him and have him just, like, you know, walk around like a normal guy, it's such a weird choice when your actual argument, your actual goal, your thesis is that, you know, we don't know who he is, but we want to find him.
Yeah.
So it's entertaining.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting that, not to spoil too much, but he even goes so far as to try and give backstory to like why this guy is the way he is. And so I feel like I feel the baiting of the trap. I feel the, you know, him trying to say like, I'm going to present this guy and even try and make him almost sympathetic for a minute, and just maybe that'll help bring the guy in or whatever. But I love the stories about, you know, taking handwriting samples of people as they came into the theater, trying to auction off a motorcycle or something. I don't know.
Yeah, to try and draw more eyeballs, draw more attention, and if you have to imagine if you're a serial killer who has yet to be caught, of course you would be drawn in by not only a movie about you, but the chance to win a motorcycle. So I mean, the logic is sound. I don't think you can argue with it.
I agree. I think there is actually a movie about Tom Hansen called The Zodiac Man, I want to say. Have you heard of this?
No.
It's a documentary I found. Yeah. It's called Zodiac Man, The True Story of a Man Who Made a Movie to Catch a Killer.
My name is Tom Hansen, and I directed the film Zodiac Killer in 1971.
Early last Saturday evening, Celia Shepherd and Brian Hartnell were sitting on this knoll of land. They thought they were alone.
I'm going to have to stab you, Pete.
This guy is just a killer, a mad killer.
The trap from the very beginning was my idea. I knew he'd come into the theater. He had to see his life story.
I'm the Zodiac!
It wasn't that Tommy thought of himself as a filmmaker. I think he was more of a conspiracy theorist.
He had lots of ideas. He was in various different businesses that we probably can't mention.
I took my gun from underneath the counter, brought it up to the top of the counter, and I said, is there anything else you want? And he said, nope, not today.
His intention in making the movie was to catch the Zodiac Killer and to film his confession and put it at the end of the movie.
Zodiac, a name that strikes fear to a city of 2 million. A brain that baffles the world's best criminologists. Zodiac.
Everything was kind of done as fast as I could. Shooting it, finishing it, getting it done, getting it up there.
I saw the movie at a drive-in in Burbank. The movie was low budget and 16 millimeter.
Senseless killing. No visible motive.
I am the Supreme Zodiac. I must collect my slaves now.
I think everyone grows up hearing amazing stories about your grandparents. Things I'm hearing sound really crazy.
Tom's at the urinal and he looks across. He looks at him and it's the face that the police had created of the Zodiac Killer.
It was identical, the mouth, the nose, the eyes, the glasses. When he turned around and said, you know, real blood doesn't come out like that.
We probably should have involved the police in it.
And I turned around and I went back to the office. I said, I think he's in the bathroom.
We all surround him and shove him into the office.
Zodiac Killer in nightmare color.
I think it isn't out yet. It's just coming out. I saw a trailer for it, but so that isn't included on this disc, although it would be a nice special feature. But there's a lot of stories in that. This disc has like a commentary with Tom Hansen, and I think he goes into a lot of the stories that would probably come out in that documentary.
Yeah, but the commentary's got some good stuff on there, as does the interview with him as well. I think that this is the kind of story that I could easily see being made into a movie, you know, like the new doc that you're talking about. Yeah. So basically the true story about the true story, you know what I mean? I think it could be a fun, you know, obviously it's a small movie, but a fun movie, because he is clearly a kind of an oddball character, you know, views himself as an amateur detective, but a very confident one. He has this elaborate plan. I mean, it's not even, it's incredibly elaborate. I mean, he's making a movie with the intention of, again, drawing in this real killer. It's definitely the kind of thing that I would love to actually see a movie about.
I mean, yeah, I think Ben Affleck should look into this.
There you go.
The other thing that this disc has is another movie called Another Son of Sam, which is, I didn't get a chance to watch that one. Did you get a chance to see that? Okay. I'm curious about this one. I know it doesn't have anything to do with Son of Sam. It was actually had a different title, and then the Son of Sam thing happened and they changed it. Joe had said it's a proto 70s proto slasher. So I'm definitely intrigued by it, and I think it's really cool.
Yeah, I'll have to give that a watch.
Yeah. So anyway, that's Zodiac Killer. Definitely worth a look. Not like any movie you're going to see anytime soon, I don't think.
No, not at all. And it's definitely one of those ones too where, I mean, like I'm not always the biggest fan on the behind the scenes features and that kind of thing, but that's the kind of movie where you definitely definitely want to, after you've seen the movie, dig into the interview and the commentary, because it's that backstory, like I said, that it's just fascinating.
Yeah, no, I mean, one thing Joe brought up in the Shockwaves interview is that they thought they caught the guy at one point, and there's a guy that I guess Tom followed around for like 15 years after, and he still thinks it's the guy or something. So you're right, total character, and that alone makes this whole experience worthwhile. But of the two films, I think the one I prefer is the next one, and that's Effects.
Okay, let's see a movie.
Nobody is going to believe a spurt of blood.
They'll believe anything we show them.
She's pretty good with that razor, huh? You ought to put her in the movie.
Well, I still don't know what to do when he comes in.
No, you're fine. You're stoned. You're confused. Besides, everything's happening too fast for you to even be scared.
It's trash. Killing somebody on film? It's sick.
No. This isn't what I thought it was.
Tell me, Dom, do you think people would pay to see something like that?
Sure, people pay to see anything.
Which, I guess, IMDb lists it as 1980, but I think it was made in 78. And then,
my understanding is that it was made earlier, but then actually had that set release date, which is why they listed as that.
Oh, got it.
Even though it didn't actually get released. But.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. What are your thoughts on this one? What can you say about Effects?
I was actually a big fan. This is the one that I had. Whereas the Zodiac one, I was again vaguely aware of. This one I had heard about, especially as someone who had kind of followed Tom Savini's career as an effects artist.
Well, I started when I was 11. I saw the movie Man of a Thousand Faces, story of Lon Chaney. Lon Chaney was a silent screen actor, makeup artist, stuntman. I just wanted to be him when I grow up. I named my son Lon after Lon Chaney, and that was it. I read makeup books from the library and. Correspondent with Dick Smith over the phone. He was the only one that would share secrets, and that's how we all learned. I mean, everything we do today is based on something Dick Smith invented. He's the greatest living makeup artist today. I remember when I was in grade school, I'd go to school with half my eyebrows missing, nose putty in my hair, for weeks. Screwing up my friends, putting half their head burn makeup, cut their throat, slit their wrist. They'd go home and their parents aren't thinking makeup. Oh my God, my son, who did that? Savini. Well, you can't play with him anymore, he's just too strange. So that was it, basically on myself, imitating what I saw in movies and then doing it to my friends or myself, We used to get together like every time Famous Monsters came out and all scour the magazine and then try to copy something, some makeup or something from the magazine. And there was an ad in the newspaper, live on stage, Frankenstein, Wolfman, Dracula, and then two horror movies. And I went, and it was a magic show. And Frankenstein was a guy in a mask, and so was the Wolfman. But Dracula was a kid that they would pick from the audience. And when I saw this, I saw Frankenstein, I saw the Wolfman, and Dracula was this little kid. He was just like standing there, doing nothing. So I made sure, I went back to see it again at a different theater and made sure they picked me for Dracula, because I had a makeup kit, I had my own cape, had my own fangs. I made sure they picked me. And then when they picked me and I became Dracula and they put the cape on me, Frankenstein would come out, the Wolfman would come out. And whereas the kid used to just come out and stand there, I hid backstage until the audience's attention was someplace else on the magician or Frankenstein. And I would sneak out and stand in front of the front row, and they couldn't see me, And then when it was my turn, I would jump up with the cape. Oh my God, I could see the wave of the audience screaming back. And that was the first time I actually scared a group like that in some makeup as some character. So they no longer went to theaters and pick some kid out of the audience. They just took me, and I became Dracula in their show, and they paid me with chocolate milkshakes. That was my first job. I was 14. I was a combat photographer in Vietnam. Vietnam was a lesson in anatomy for me. And looking through the camera was a separation between me and this real horrible gore that I was seeing. I mean, I still was kind of screwed up when I came home. We turn your emotions off, it's hard to get them back on. But Vietnam was simply a great lesson in anatomy. So when I create makeup effects, the fake stuff, if it doesn't give me the same feeling I got when I saw the real stuff, then the fake stuff isn't real enough for me. And I judge all makeup effects that way. Vietnam showed me that people die with, one eye closed, one eye half open. The jaw always goes slack. Some people die with smiles on their face. So I try to do that to the cadavers or bodies now, make them look dead. I don't usually see a good portrayal of death from an actor in a movie, because I saw the real thing.
I would occasionally, you know, in an interview or something like that, there would be like a mention of this film would be dropped in there. But I never actually came across and had the chance to see it until now. And I think it's a great little movie. It clearly has, you know, its limitations of budget and stuff like that, but the people involved, I mean, the performances are all solid. The story itself is very much ahead of its time.
What can you say about the story? Because we don't want to spoil it completely, but there are parts of it you have to sort of give.
I think the core setup is basically it's this little indie film crew who are heading to a rented house, you know, kind of rural location, and they're going to film a movie. And so some of the crew are ones, you know, guys, you know, and gals who've been together for a while, but they've got some new folks coming in as well. And one of them is their director of photography, I think is what he's doing. It's Joe Pilato from like Day of the Dead and, you know, other films. But as the weekend, you know, and over the 3 or 4 days, whatever, as it goes on, the director, what's his name, John Harrison? John Harrison plays the director, and he's actually someone who's better known as a filmmaker and composer as opposed to an actor, but he does a good job here because he's got kind of a cold, detached persona, which I think is great for playing a director, but also in this particular character. But anyways, as the days roll on, it becomes clear that something else is going on here. They're not just there filming, you know, a horror movie. There's maybe something else, another layer going on. And it's not necessarily a huge surprise, partially because of the marketing, and even if you look at the Blu-ray, it'll talk about it. But also you can kind of catch some clues, because watching it now, having seen obviously several decades worth of movies that have kind of borrowed some similar themes, you kind of see what's coming.
Yeah.
But even I felt, even knowing that, even knowing what was coming up, whatever, I still got really engaged into the story because of that dynamic between, because of the filmmakers, because of the director's ideas of trying to find something that would draw in viewers, which is kind of the core. And so they're talking about snuff films, and, you know, and at one point he asks some of the members of the crew, you know, do you think people would pay to see a real snuff film? And the response is, well, people would pay to see anything. And it's like a little bit of commentary, but it's totally true. And so, but it makes a fun little thriller out of it. And there's just some interesting faces in there, people from the Pittsburgh movie scene, George Romero's, you know, hood. And so it's not a gore fest at all, which is actually what I thought it was.
Me previously. Too.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's some bloodletting in there, but it's not at all a gore fest, but it is just a kind of a smart, quiet little thriller until it's not. And it's got a really solid ending that I won't talk about, but I think it's really, really well done.
No, the ending was great. And the ending, like, to be honest, the whole movie kind of had me on sort of thinking like, I don't know if I know what's going on here. I don't know if I know where this is going, which I in the commentary from the filmmakers, I think you had mentioned it kind of being ahead of its time. And I feel like it definitely was. And he said people who are the viewers now are much more sophisticated, but even so, like you say, I was still like really engaged by this, even having seen so much meta stuff as we have today. So I can't imagine what, you know, there's a story about how they made some kind of bad distribution deal, so this movie never really got a release, so an audience wasn't even allowed to really react to it. But I can't imagine, it seems like those that did see it, maybe some didn't know what to make of it or weren't ready for it, you know.
I can see that, and again, even seeing it now and having an inkling of what's coming up, it does a good job across its ensemble of characters of leaving us, the viewers, kind of unsure and uncertain as far as who's potentially involved, who knows what, who's, you know, a possible victim. It does a good job of that. And so you have kind of like a loyalty to Pilato's character, because he's kind of like the main, you know, regular guy in there. But as far as everybody else goes, there's some weird behaviors, some weird characters but you don't know, does that make them bad? Does that just mean that they're just wacky filmmakers? It kind of leaves a lot up in the air as you're going along. And so you don't quite, I kind of like the feeling, again, even though I feel like I knew where the plot was going, where the story was going, where it was going to turn out, I still felt a little bit, you know, on edge and you know, kind of uncertain as far as who was going to be a part of it all. And that was a strong feeling. I like that.
Yeah, I did too. I know there are some people that don't like the whole, I guess, milieu of a film about filmmaking. That's just not their bag. And there are certainly some that are obnoxious and annoying, but for the most part, that's something I've always been fascinated by. Mm-hmm. And so that first scene when they pull away and you see that they're making a movie, you have my interest, and then it's yours to fuck up, basically. And I feel like you say, they don't. They really make it interesting. And then when they add the other levels, it's really interesting to kind of see like who knows what's going on and who's been told what, and it's pretty great in that respect. And it's definitely one that for me will be on my little discoveries list that I'll do for my blog come January next year, because
you got a podcast and a blog.
Look at me, fancy pants. But the other thing I love about it too is just Tom Savini as an actor. I'm always a fan of him showing up in a movie, and he's really obnoxious and kind of creepy in this one.
He plays a great egotistical dick. he does it like in, I think, maybe even every performance I've seen him in, from Knight Riders to like From Dusk Till Dawn. I mean, he's not playing like a nice, fun guy. He's playing somebody who is just so full of himself, but he's like endlessly entertaining as that dick. So it's worthwhile.
You know what we need is some Tom Savini rom-coms, I think. We're missing right now. But no, he is great in that role. I agree.
Yeah, he's great. I think the other thing I want to mention about the movie too is I think that without getting into specifics, but there's a, because you know, like the 70s, I know this is listed as 80, but I mean, the 70s had like a kind of a conspiratorial trend in a lot of movies that came out in that decade. And I think that even though this is like obviously not any kind of like political thriller or anything like that, there's, for me anyways, as it approaches into that third act, I got a little bit of that vibe of, you know, just like a kind of a cynical conspiracy view, a conspiratorial view of the people in power, about the, you know, people manipulating, controlling what it is, and then just the populace blindly going along with it. So it's, again, it's completely unrelated to the narrative, but I really enjoyed that vibe that came off of it, where it was kind of a regular thriller, but then become something that for me, like I said, just felt pure 70s and had that kind of vibe where it was, again, you just can't trust what's happening, and the odds are not good for anybody you care about. I really dug that.
No, I did too. And I mean, not to get political at all, but just now feels like the right time for me to see this one, at least. It affected me more now than it might have 2 years ago, you know,
right,
in terms of that cynicism. But yeah, this is a really nice disc. It's got the commentary track. It's got some early short films. It's got a documentary called After Effects, which is all about the making of the film.
It's a great doc, too.
It really is. Yeah, and that's got a commentary on it, too, which is great. But they reunite the cast and the filmmakers, and George Romero is in there, which is obviously really nice to see.
Yeah.
So they just go through the circumstances surrounding that Pittsburgh film scene and the circumstances surrounding the making of this movie. And it's, like I said, Agfa is really coming out strong with these Blu-rays. This is a really nice disc, taking a lot of care in putting it together.
Yeah, no, I agree. It bodes very well for the future of the label. And again, as we said earlier, I'm just over the moon and thrilled to see another label that is doing those two things. One, finding movies that most folks, just absolutely most folks, have not seen, let alone heard of. And then two, releasing them with just an abundance of love and affection.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that will do it, I think, for this episode, sir. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to me about these movies. If when the new Agfa films come out, maybe we should think about talking about those if you're into it.
I would happily talk to you about any movies.
I do appreciate that about you, sir. So thank you so much. People can find you on Twitter at Fake Rob Hunter.
Correct.
And look for you at Film School Rejects, and you said Slash Film, and
yeah, and I'm occasionally over at Crooked Marquee as well. But yeah, Film School Rejects is my main haunt, and that's where to find most of my stuff.
Yeah, I do appreciate all the new film coverage you do, and I do recommend, certainly for fans of this show, that they check out most Tuesdays. You put out your column about the new releases and your picks.
Yeah, I do the new release column every Tuesday, and then I'll also, again, when a title kind of catches my eye, I'll do like a feature piece, like I did one recently on the new Arrow's new Reanimator, and previously their Bird with the Crystal Plumage. So
yeah, definitely keep an eye out for that. You did a piece on effects, actually. People can read if they like. So big thanks to you, Rob. I really appreciate you coming on, and hopefully I can get you back real soon.
Well, now that I know that you have a podcast, I'll be happy to return.
Thank you so much. Thank you everyone for listening, and have a lovely and Blu-ray filled week. Bye-bye.
I'm the Zodiac!
You don't remember what you said to me the other night when you were drunk in front of 20 people? Well, you called me an easy piece.
Well?
Yeah. Well, the next time I see you at a Nets, when there are plenty of people there, I'm going to show you to be the cheap, ignorant phony you really are. Truck driver,